Blog Talk Radio.
Zero, longitude zero, planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
Washington, D.C. For many of you, this will be your first visit to this historical landmark.
Our tour through these hallowed halls will be conducted by the First Lady.
Good evening, America. This is your president. Please listen carefully to the announcement I'm about to make. After careful consideration and research, Vice President Duke, Congress, and myself have concluded that black people have not advanced technologically. Their educational testing scores are on a rapid decline. The vast majority of them are on welfare and producing babies at a faster rate than they can support them, and we will not carry them anymore. We are left with no other choice but to put slavery back into effect. All blacks will report to the designated camps in their area to receive further orders. The only blacks excused will be those serving in the United States military and the police. Any blacks who do not cooperate will be terminated immediately. I repeat, slavery is back in effect.
We are at war! That's what I told you! I know you heard what the president said, and if the nigga don't move, then he's dead. It's time for us to take the stand. Woman to woman and man to man. Blood rushes through your veins, you feel the fear. Who'd have thought that it could happen here? In the land of the free, home of the brave. The year's 95, you're a slave. Some go in shock when they first hear the news. Press play and then rewind. racism was here, but they didn't take it seriously. And then they said that I was crazy. Violence escalating, and it's sad to see so many brothers being killed by the enemy. Mothers and daughters and fathers and sons. Why can't they see we couldn't win by the gun? I told you how to win, but now it's too late. The enemy's on the rise, and he steals your face. Greed is a weapon, technology section. The war drum is sounding, the tool is the record. The will and the skill of the black man, exact man. Giving a hand to his brother man. A word to the wise, and I tell you once again. Know your enemy from your friend.
Dangerous.
No, Howard. You liberals have let them invade our society. You give them jobs, political jobs.
Paul, you missed the point. It's only the smart ones we move up.
That makes it even worse.
Oh, no, we have to move them up. If we leave a smart one in the ghetto, he might develop into a leader against us. But if we raise him up into white society, we neutralize him. He feels compelled to try to act like us. He loses his identity and... His racial anger, if he has any. He becomes alien to his brothers. They realize he sold them out and they grow to hate him. He becomes worthless to them and safe for us. No, thank you. In fact, in his love for the creature comforts, except for his color, he's become one of us.
It's you liberals who have lifted them up, Howard.
Paul, you conservatives make a mistake. You can't afford to strangle hope in people. Without hope, people become dangerous.
No, Howard. You liberals have let them invade our society. You give them jobs, political jobs.
Paul, you missed the point. It's only the smart ones we move up.
That makes it even worse.
Oh, no, we have to move them up. If we leave a smart one in the ghetto, he might develop into a leader against us. But if we raise him up into white society, we neutralize him. He feels compelled to try to act like us. He loses his identity and his racial anger, if he has any. He becomes alien to his brothers. They realize he sold them out and they grow to hate him. He becomes worthless to them and safe for us. No, thank you. In fact, in his love for the creature comforts, except for his color, he's become one of us.
We greet you with Revelshire greetings on the works and life of Brother Kwame Nkrumah. As he wrote in his handbook of Revolutionary Warfare, page 16, when he stated, "The struggle against puppet governments is the basic condition for the survival and development of a genuine liberation movement in Africa. We must accept the challenge and fight to destroy this threat to our future as a free and united continent. Welcome to Africa on the Moon." On the 7th day of April 2024, as we conduct this program under today's theme, part one of Haiti, Guyana, and the West. Yes, a theme for part one today will be around Haiti, Guyana, and the West. And we welcome you to join us by dialing in at 323-679-0841. With our political panelists and analysts today, they will set the seat and they will take the heat, because as they define it, they will stand behind it. Welcome again to the voice of Brother Africa, and you're listening to Africa on the Moon. The order for today's program will include an introduction of our political panelists and analysts, followed by the segment, What's Going On in Our World, in Your Community, and the discussion of the theme, Haiti, Guyana, and the West. So at this point in time, like always, you know how we get started with our party and continue to travel down the road of liberation. That is to introduce to you our political panelists and analysts for today's program. And we'd like to just make the statement to all who listen that our independent panelists and analysts use their thoughts, and thoughts are totally their views and thoughts, and not necessarily the views and thoughts of Africa on the Moon, its members, nor its affiliates. So on that note, let's get started with this part again. First, we'd like to welcome Brother Haki, who is a organizer and member of the African Awareness Association. And at this point in time, we're going to bring me in and say, Brother Haki, welcome to Africa on the Moon.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mashoke. Currently, I'm with African Awareness. And Brother Africa, you know my thing is all about creating those institutions in the community. But you know, one of the things certainly one of the stumbling blocks in terms of creating those kind of institutions within the community, there's certain realities we have to become acquainted with in terms of understanding where we are in terms of this point of history. One of the things is that when you talk about the propensity of capitalism and the kind of games that perpetuates, we got to fundamentally understand that the games that capitalism perpetuates are particularly destructive to the aspirations of working people, people of color, in particular, you know, immigrants. One of the things, when you talk about this propensity for capitalism to blame the poor, often you hear analysis, you know, coming by way of news, which talks about crime, high school dropout rates, unemployment, as though somehow the poor people are actually responsible or for these things being in existence. There's no critique in terms of systems, in terms of how they impact humanity. So simply what they do is to blame all the problems of society on poor people. And so this kind of propensity, I think, is very, very interesting. And one of the things when we talk about organization and community, we have to be cognizant of this propensity and try to devise strategies to get around it. But having said that, Brother Africa, I want you to check this out. The distorted view of far-right conservatism inhabits a realm of reality uniquely suited to rationalize the indefensible. In this realm, their predilection to blame the powerless for U.S. decline is self-evident. The tendency to blame the poor, in no small part, results from social conditioning that finds it easier to scapegoat the poor rather than confront systems of power that is directly implicated in America's decline. This process of social conditioning must not be viewed in isolation from the systemic diversion of U.S. institutions. Implicit in disseminating disinformation for the express purpose of deceiving the U.S. population. The effect has been to elevate capitalism's inherent structural limitations while castigating or demeaning the poor, those who are most negatively impacted by capitalism. Systematic distractions have been effective in distorting information in regards to the role U.S. institutions play in advancing U.S. decline, fueling both anger and resentment directed at the powerless. Now, the most recent example of duplicity involving U.S. institutions and elites centered around the COVID-19 spectacle and the political calculations involved. Many scholars take the position shutting down the economy was not only ill-advised, but totally unwarranted. Implication being, the political dimensions involved in shutting down the global economy may have been a bigger consideration than the health of the global population. Such suppositions cannot be easily dismissed. When considering the role of creative destruction in capitalism ethos, the elimination of inefficient businesses provides opportunity for more efficient businesses to thrive, benefiting society in terms of reducing inflation, stimulating employment, increasing investment opportunities in upcoming businesses with opportunity to increase production output and benefit to government revenues. This option was dismissed, but the question is why? Simply for political reasons. According to the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, or restructuring the global finance system, is mandatory if the West is to maintain control over the world's economies. In this regard, the role of how best to facilitate the Great Reset was questionable, but with the advent of COVID-19, it provided the perfect pretext with the understanding the U.S. leadership role is crucial. However, with the declining U.S. economy going back to the 1980s, the ability of U.S. to impose its will on the rest of the world was greatly weakened. After the 2008 subprime debacle, the instability of the capitalist order and the devastation to the global economy, radical strategy was needed. And with the emergence of COVID-19, many speculated it afforded elites a unique opportunity not only to advance the Great Reset, but to enrich elites in the process, solidifying elite political control in Western states. As a side note, the emergence of far-right political parties and far-right activism in Western states is no mistake. Their emergence increases the chances of pushing the state further right in the benefit to elites. Now, the biggest obstacle methodically closing down the U.S. economy was one of strategy. By way of media, few have been sufficiently galvanized, assuring the masses of the threat posed by other citizens spreading COVID and the urgency of vaccinations against a virus whose origin was unknown. While this strategy was effective, opposition to vaccines was joining a cacophony of voices decrying civil rights violations, compelling workers to take their vaccines or lose their jobs. There would be no religious exemption for most. This resistance was countered by elites with an ingenious strategy, essentially coercing the support of corporations and of businesses who saw them as simply too benevolent or empathetic to the civil rights. That strategy involved the use of debt. As Yanis Varoufakis, Greek historian economist, put it, debt is to capitalism what hell is to Christians, unpleasant and essential. The plan was simple. Government would spend $7 to $8 trillion on programs to subsidize businesses and individuals for shutting down the U.S. economy. The odd thing about these expenditures, corporations were allowed to write off these expenditures against losses occurring as far back as the year 2017. According to the Institution of Taxation and Economic Policy, 55 of the largest corporations received $40.5 billion from corporate programs who were avoided paying $8.5 million in taxes and received a tax rebate or refund of $3.5 billion. No one should be surprised at the level of corruption in U.S. corporations, but the manner in which the government administered the COVID funding programs were suspect. Capitalist ethos hold a free lunch is bad for business. In other words, you can't get something for nothing. Under this rubric, not only should demanding corporations repay government funds at a market rate, but the government investment should have been structured where corporations begin repayments monthly at low interest, gradually increasing interest after a year until it reaches the market rate. This formula would ensure the expansion of the U.S. economy because the flow of money through the financial system would make economic expansion possible. However, the government did not put economic demands on the corporations. But why? Without economic expansion, consumerism, the lifeline of capitalism, contracts, imperiling the government's ability to bring in revenues. This is where the politics comes in. Just like internationally, the imperative to move the country to the right is key to maintaining U.S. imperialism. Keep in mind, moving the country to the far right is not only an indication of society's decline, But just as importantly, this strategy ensures the top 10% of wage earners have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. Superimposed, the estimated 85 million evangelicals, many of whom reject science, constitute a sizable population predisposed to rubber stamp any actions the rulers deem essential, including draconian laws, killing on a mass level, discrimination, and teaching the falsehoods declaring the greatness of America despite a dismal history of inequality, racism, and persecution of innocent people. However, there's more to contemplate. The growing discontent among U.S. citizens and a feeling powerless among those individuals 25 years and younger constitute an implicit threat to elites in the U.S. and its institutions. Minimizing that threat can be achieved providing the country moves further to the right. How would you move the country further to the right? Well, one of the easiest ways is to expand inequality, which the U.S. has done a very seamless job at achieving. Government expenditures of PPP, Payroll Protection Program, and the CARES Act resulted in the wealth of the top 1% increasing their wealth by $15 trillion, while that same group holds 50% of all securities, stocks, and bonds. Collectively, this group holds $45 trillion in wealth, greater than national debt in the U.S. between $34 trillion to $38 trillion. This wealth, courtesy of government handouts to wealth under COVID, is used to buy politicians, corrupt legal institutions, and fund far-right movements. When taking into account the systematic defunding of state budgets from the federal government, it is easy to discern a strategy designed to foment conflict and inequality while conveniently blaming the poor for decline is operating. Furthering the need for politically deconstructing society and its ramifications relating to policy. Without further clarity, this maniacal system will succeed in establishing authoritarianism and a dystopian reality vastly worse compared to Nazi Germany. Wokeness is a prerequisite we'll survive in the society. And with that, Brother Africa, I conclude.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Next, we will introduce our next political panelist, Brother Anthony Williams, who is an organizer and member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party. We welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Anthony.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Brother Africa. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Following Brother Anthony, we now bring in Brother Robert Moses, who is a member and organizer for the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. We welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Moses.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses, and I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism, the father of scientific socialism, during a government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that Mao Zedong is his messenger for government. Fathers, help your children. We don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice. And I vote. I bear witness that women hold up half the sky. Therefore, I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment, ERAS. And we continue to struggle to unite the many to defeat the few. The few who hold much of the wealth of this country and have us wage slaving in the system without free education by the government, without free education, free health care by the government. We're wage slave systems. We're getting deeper and deeper in the debt. Poor getting poorer, rich getting richer. And this is the capitalist system we're under. And another world is possible. And we have to struggle in this political economy to keep politics in command and to bring about a new day by organization, organization, organization. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Next, we have Sister Eleanor Johnson, who is also an organizer and member of the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. We will now bring her in. Welcome, Sister Eleanor, to Africa on the Move.
Thank you, Brother Africa. Thank you so much for having me. Good evening to our fellow panelists and guests, and good evening and thank you to our listening audience in the United States and abroad. My name is Eleanor Johnson. I am a human rights advocate and an artist, and am delighted to be here this evening, Brother Africa. Thank you once again for having me.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor, for being here. As we say, I'm Brother Africa. This is Africa on the Move. We're going to do something a little different than normal. Right now, we're going to take a revolutionary culture break. Following the culture break, you're going to hear an interview from Sister Zelly Danto from the Free Haiti Movement, Free Haitian Lawyer Guild. The title of this particular interview is Zelly Danto Discussing Haiti Truth Hidden Behind Headlines with Dr. Mata. Now, this interview took place on April the 5th, 2024. You can catch the whole interview on YouTube. We'd like to thank the creators who have done an excellent job on this particular presentation. We will play some of the excerpts from the clipping, and then when we come back, as we stated to you earlier, our theme tonight is on Haiti, Haiti, Guyana, and the West. We have our political panelists and analysts to weigh in on critiquing that particular interview. So we're going to make our transition now, and when we come back, we will open up to our panelists to have that critique of the interview as it relates to Haiti. So we'll be right back. This is Africa on the Move, and you're listening to Brother Africa.
Hunger in chains, living in pain, today is the same, and nothing ever changes. Can't tell the truth, filled with abuse, and everywhere there's danger. How long can this go on? When will the light I see? I know I must be strong to last through my journey. Yes, to last through my journey. Time will arrive when we must decide to get off the ride and stop going through these changes. We must prepare and learn how to care, for soon we'll be there where our lives won't be in danger. And when the light is clear, oh, how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 yeah. Made it through my journey.
Pellerino, a bloodline across the waters, from Benin to Salvador Bahia, a scar across the face of the earth. Pellerino, the place they brought the Africans, the place where they tried to make them slaves. Pellerino, you can feel the whip hear the cries and see the blood in the red clay. The clay that holds the stones together is African. And each stone is a bone from a people called slaves. Pellerino was the place where death came to dwell. His neighbors did not complain, for he was a way out. From the cold gray cobblestone streets to the lifeless cathedrals, tall walls of demons called angels, haunted visions of white faces crucifying Jesus again and again. But in the sacrifice of this blood, of this dance with death, comes life more rich, more pure, more alive, where death spent many lonely nights pacing the floors of his funeral parlor, waiting for someone to die. Pellerino, a French word called the place of torture, became a place of strength, a place where faces of white saints became faces of black gods, where haunted visions and demons became healing visionaries and orishas from the motherland. And Jesus rejoined his kinfolk and was reborn and baptized in the sound of sensual skin turned up to dance, to inspire a fire like the sun, pronouncing his presence. Pellerino was the tongue of the flame, licking the eyes of those who tried to remain blind, shining a light on a spirit that would not be denied. No, the chains did not break the spirit, did not enslave the music of my soul, did not shackle the will of my freedom, did not tarnish the glow of my gold. And all the Pellerinos in Africa, in Europe, in North and South America cannot destroy the majesty of my people, the love of my people, shining like the sun everywhere we go. Everywhere we go. When the light is clear, oh, how beautiful I will be. That I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 yeah.
The Dehishian family. Peace and love to you, my sister. How are you doing tonight?
Honor and respect. Honor and respect to all your listeners. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know how, like, when you're doing the work, you're exhausted, but you keep on doing the work. Ashe, you keep on doing the work. You know I'm rocking one of your shirts that I grabbed.
I almost wore that one.
I had to put it on. I actually purchased the one you have in the back that says hashtag free Haiti. I had that one, and then I purchased this one as well, just to let it be known. And everybody knows where I stand and where my position is. Free Haiti, man, free Haiti. And I stand in solidarity with my brothers and sisters right there in Haiti. But I reached out to you a couple of weeks ago. I just want to give the people some background information. I reached out to you prior to my trip to Ghana, and I know you were all over the place because a lot was going on in Haiti, and you're a boots on the ground person. This is not, you're not a YouTuber. You're not a social media person. You know, you come on social media to disseminate the information, but you do the work, right? You have boots on the ground. You have an organization, and you've been fighting for the freedom of Haiti for years. You know what I mean? I want to say decades, but I know for years you've been there, and you're one of the top scholars, one of the top activists over there. Even Professor James Small, when he was on this platform a few weeks ago, he's like, if y'all want to know what's going on and you want to help, you better reach out to Sister Isalie Danto. So he plugged you a couple of weeks ago. Holla at that sister, you know. And so I reached out to you even before I reached out to him, because I said, you know, you're the person, you're the go-to person when it comes to getting authentic information about what's happening. I tell folks, don't go listen to the media. go to Sister Izzy Danto, go to her page. She'll let you know what's going on. Because as you know, the media is spinning it as if, you know, Haiti has a gang problem. They're sending $300 million over there to help the people of IAT, to help them with this gang problem. They're just trying to figure out and stabilize the country. And that's what they're spinning, right? You know, but we know that that's not the truth. And that's why I reached out to you to uncover the truth. My sister, what is actually going on in IAT? Oh, you're muted. You're muted. I don't know what happened.
A quiet genocide is going on in IAT, and it's been going on for a long, long time. Now they just seem to be sort of like a final solution type of thing. The media has all of these. I mean, they're just changing the narrative. And I can't be everywhere because, you know, there's so much happening. But yes, so what is going on in IAT? Well, what you're hearing in the media are almost all lies. So here, I'm going to try to break it down during the time that we have here together. So 2004, that was the bicentennial since our independence. You know, 1804, first Black Republic, after 300 years of slavery. Now they've come back. France has come back, and they've come back, and I want your audience to know this. They've come back as one. One of the reasons we were able to do the revolution was because back in 1791 when it began, the European tribes were fighting each other. So the British, the French, and the Spanish were fighting each other to take territory in America and in the Caribbean. So Jamaica, British, Cuba, Spain. Look at a map, folks, okay? This is really important so you know where we're situated, right? And which of the tribes were fighting for this most important piece of land. I know most of you already know that IAT was the most lucrative colony. As a matter of fact, no colony in the world has ever been as lucrative as IAT. The French controlled it. The Spanish was on the other side with Santo Domingo. Originally in 1492, when the conquistador and the pedophile named Columbus, IAT was the first place. So you can understand, I lead the Free IAT movement. And my ancestors have been resisting these tyrants. 300 years of enslavement, and now 220 years since we got our independence, they want to come back. These are the most recalcitrant, evil people. I have to constantly brace myself to come and tell you the truth, because the horrors they commit against us will make nature shudder. I am quoting right now, our act Dessalines killed 3,000 whites who were left in IAT because they still thought that they could continue the revolution even after we won and threw Napoleon out. And I want all of you to remember this. On April 8th, Dessalines' proclamation of liberté is liberty or death. And that's what he said to the gathering. And who was there at this gathering on April 8, 1804, some 220 years ago? It was Africans from all over Africa, from the Congo, from West Africa, from Dahomey, all the way down to Angola. They had been fighting in West Africa, and a lot of them were soldiers. Amongst those soldiers were many women warriors, a few from the Dahomeyan elite female regiments. One, her name is, she was a Maroon general, Abdarayatoya. When she saw, when she got to IHC enslaved, she gathered the children together. These are things to remember. And she taught Jean-Jacques Dessalines how to fight in the manner of the warriors of Africa. Brought him up to the Maroon Bands, taught him all that she knew. She is one of the mothers of our independence. I say that today because today the women of the Congo, the women of Haiti, were facing the same enemy all over again. And they're using Africans like Kenya. Right now, the United States, they, all right, so you all, you guys know that when you see a policeman kill an unarmed man, how psychologically devastating that is. Imagine how psychologically devastating the wasteland they're making of Haiti right now with militias that they have created, that they arm, how that hurts all Haitians, all Africans. And they are crushing us with these visuals on purpose. Those of you who are interested in real history, this last week, whenever I do an interview, I lift up Bois Antonier, who was our first historian. And I tell folks to go find his work. He wrote it the year of our independence. And as he wrote it, this is what he said. He said, I don't know how to tell you how to retrace the horrors we've just lived. Why, for instance, Dessalines had to kill these white folks after the revolution, because they keep coming back. And now they're back again, totally back. They have come back in the form of six nations, because we are the resistance and we fight back. You won't see this in the mainstream media. They will create a man named Barbecue, Henri Cherizier, and then they will tell you that he's a revolutionary. Tonight, I will tell you he is not a revolutionary. I will tell you what exactly they're doing. I will tell you how it relates to history, how it relates to Biden, how it relates to immigration. And if I don't, please remind me. So in 2004, 200 years after our independence, we got our independence in 1804. As I said, Haiti was so rich for the French that it produced more money for the French than all 13 American colonies did for England. This small piece of land, because they worked us to death. The lifespan of an African was between 3 to 6 years. And during the revolution, at the beginning, there was 500,000 Haitians, or Africans from all of the different bases in Africa. Today, we are the amalgamated tribes, right? We are all of them. We are the Congo, we are the Oyo, we are the Dahomeyan, we are the Ashanti. That's who we are. That's what Haitian is. And the United States sells itself as the land of the free and the land of the brave, because, and it hates the fact that we are the land of the free and the land of the brave. We're the ones that abolished slavery. We're the one that stopped direct colonialism. We're the one that stopped forced assimilation. The same instruments of war that they used to conquer West Africa and colonize the world, they are still using today. And let me tell you, sex, they rape our women. Create men that rape our women, drugs, and their guns. So right now, we don't manufacture guns just like Baltimore doesn't manufacture guns. So they bring it into our communities, right? So in IET, at some point in time in the 19th century, the United States and France came back, but they didn't come back directly. Right now, they're not coming back directly. They're asking for Kenya. Think of them as a slave trader on behalf of the imperialist United States.
Mm.
In exchange for coming back and putting and heading a pacification program to pummel and kill in the resistance, the Free IET movement, and all of us who are real revolutionaries who don't get any platforms. In order to do that, they will find a black face. Right now, there are, of course, you know, there's the mulatto factor. You all know what they did to us with Obama. They just gave us Hillary and Bill Clinton. They collected $13 billion. Mm. There was an earthquake out of nowhere, and they left what you see now, even though Biden and Obama went around talking about with Clinton how they were going to build IET back better. But they left us with cholera that killed nearly, they say 10,000, we say 30,000 people. They left us, and it made, they say, 1 million people sick. We say 3 million people sick. And every rainy season, it comes back. So they left us with their feces. What else did they leave us? Between 2004 and 2017, the UN had a mission named MINUSTAH. It left between 500,000 to 1 million children. Those are the ones making up the gangs. They have no parents. I tried to sue the UN. Of course, you know, they have immunity.
Mm.
They left us with all of this chaos because they want to disconnect us from the ancestors. So now we have children whose father comes from Sri Lanka, Brazil, Chile, Nigeria, and so on. All the soldiers who were part of the UN mission. And there's no way, they make no way for the mothers, most of whom were raped by these evil, evil pedophiles, to get any support. So the population of IET right now, half the population is under 24 years old. I've been working to free IET, to counter the imperialists and their, since 1994.
Mm.
This year makes it 30 straight years.
Mm.
I tell you that it takes me much longer now to brace myself to tell you their horrors.
Mm.
And I have to look at Bois Antonin in his book because it helps me get through.
Mm.
I suggest that you all read it because he tells you that they are just evil assassins. They train dogs to eat us back in those days. And today, what are they doing? They're training our own men and children, a wasteland. So the media keeps telling you that 80% of the capital of Port-au-Prince are run by gangs. Let's first look at the fact. And I want you all to go Google, because the information is there.
Right.
There are between 12 to 10 million Haitians. 70% live in the outback. So they want you to focus on the capital where the European tribes created a sort of Wakanda, right? They live up in the hills with a few white Syrian Lebanese who control all the ports and who arm the barbecues, the Izos, these gangs. So, and what I'm saying, let me tell you some of the names of who arms these gangs. And, oh, wow, the United States, when they tell you about the gangs in IET, you never see the white faces who arm them. So So if you go to my Twitter, I used to write a lot. People don't read, but I don't write that much anymore. But I do have pictures if you're interested. All right. So the most violent, degenerate folks, who they are, right? Look up Gilbert Biggio, B-I-G-I-O, and his mafia family. These are folks that come from Aleppo, Syria. Remember, these Middle Eastern folks, these that are in IT, and it's not just IT. They're in Jamaica. They're in the Dominican Republic. They're the buffer races that the European uses. Gilbert Biggio, that's Mate Lee that you're looking at right now, that the United States put in office over, you know, in a scam election back after the earthquake with, but Gilbert Biggio has been sanctioned. If you just Google Gilbert Biggio sanctioned for financing gangs, and you see all their names. Let me see. So that's kind of.
Swelling means there's blood and fluid getting stuck, and when your lymphatic system is clogged up, that.
A school, a hospital. Why are they doing it? Like I said, get a map, people. And I say it all the time. I'm getting a little tired of it, but okay. The European tribes have been fighting each other since they got out of their mother's wombs. So you have Russia is in Cuba and Venezuela. Okay, y'all just look it up. All right? Cuba is right next to us. Venezuela is right under us. And we're that naval base where the United States counters Russian expansion in the Western Hemisphere. That's what we are. So if they could get that land with no black people on it, or their integrated Negroes on it, like those domestic integrated Negroes you just saw at the White House, the Al Sharptons and the Eric Adams, who just sat there at the White House to beg Biden to bring to bring military to help us, the Haitian people, get rid of the gangs. I already told you who the gangs are and who controls them. All right. So it makes no sense that the U.S., the nuclear power, superpower that it is sitting right there, and then the gangs are right around it, right around it, right. Like Vita Lom and Mao Zedong, all those people. Mao Zedong, I'll give you as an aside, right? That guy, Kim Ives, this control opposition guy, he's been around in the Haitian community forever. He used to have a WBAI show. I'm glad they took that away from him because he can't speak on behalf of Haitian. But he has spent the last couple of 3 years giving media to barbecue and building him up, him and another guy named Dan Cohen. All right, write this down, you guys. Rewatch this, okay, because God knows how long I'm going to be here to be telling you these stories, okay? And like I said, Raul Tonea said in his book, it's called, try to find it, okay? Academics don't talk about it, but it's called Memory for the History of IHC, and it's 1804. There's a young brother on YouTube who actually reads it in English. If you just want to listen to him, it's like a five parts. You can find it. But in his book, you know, he says, you know, I got to brace myself to tell you all the horrors that they commit against us. And that's what I got to do, because the mental destruction and physical destruction of having to go through this. And tell you, and then tell it to you, right? So I'm asking you too, take care of yourself, people. Take care of yourself, because all of it is trying to kill your soul. Don't let them do it, right? You got to have a balance. So we are that naval base. The U.S. has something like 10 acres right there in Port-au-Prince. That's as big as the U.S. Embassy in China. And remember, China almost has 2 billion people. We only have 13 million. So you see how important we are, right? Okay. So the waterways is the way the European tribes maintain their military hegemony, okay? This is why Kenya is fighting Somalia. Like any nation that goes out into the ocean, the U.S. must control, because that's how they fight their military wars. That's why they're always, you know, trying to push you inland. Like, for instance, look up Djibouti. Never existed. They created it so that they can make Somalia or Ethiopia, those countries, landlocked. So they can, when they make you landlocked, right, they're the ones going to bring you food. They're the ones that are going to bring you trade. That's what they want to do. Right now, we have a big shoreline, and we're black. And we're right at the, what they call the Windward Passage. So in addition, I'm going to tell you how much military is in the IHC, okay? In addition to having the biggest, fourth largest embassy in the world, and the largest embassy in the Western Hemisphere in IHC, and they can't take care of these gangs, they got to go look for William Ruto and 1,000 policemen. And listen, IET has 10,000 police. So you see, the mind F they're doing to you? Look,
absolutely.
We have 10,000 police. The U.S. has an embargo on U.S. on arms going officially to IET. They enforce that embargo on the Haitian police. But the oligarchy and their neo-Duvalier's politicians have armed the gangs so that they out-arm the gangs against the police. Now they want to tell you they're going to get 1,000 police from Kenya. You see that, right?
Absolutely.
Let me make it deeper for you guys. This is why I'm saying, like, okay, excuse me, I need some water or something. They tell you that IET needs a security force, another foreign security force. And then they have Canada right now training people from the Bahamas, Jamaica, and Belize, and other nations to come to IET, be part of this Kenyan-led force that ostensibly is going to help us with the gangs that the U.S. keep in power. All right. At the same time, right? Remember, Guantanamo Bay is right next to us. It's a big U.S. naval base with lots of military. You guys remember Guantanamo, right, where they used to put the Al-Qaeda and, mm-hmm. and so on, right? Okay. So Guantanamo is less than 15 minutes away. If the United States wanted to take care of these guys, they could. U.S. Embassy is right there. They could. But let me give you another thing. It's another mine F.
Hmm.
Biden has something called, they want to kill us. And at the same time, they're doing it on multi-levels, what we call brain drain. So Biden has a program. It's called the Biden program to immigrate Haitians with some means out of IET. Now, I've been doing this work for a long time. I've never seen anything like it. And when it first came out, I was puzzled as hell. I don't know all of it, but I can give you what I think is happening. In the Biden program, to really understand what's going on, you have to know who's in the Biden program. Which countries in the Caribbean are allowed to immigrate into U.S. towns right now? Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Haiti. Wow. Any of you know anything about? Can you tell me what the other three have in common? Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela. What do you think, Dr. Mott?
What they have, what all of those countries have in common?
Except for Haiti, the three. Okay, there's four, but Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela. Who do they have in common as an ally?
What, the U.S.?
No, the U.S. is
Cuba. Russia.
Russia.
Okay, Russia. Okay. I thought it was U.S. or Russia.
I know you knew that.
No, so, I didn't. I was just like, which one? U.S. or Russia? But go ahead. Russia.
Okay. So Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
Cuba. Remember, they've had an embargo on Cuba since 1963 with the Khrushchev and all of that, right? Because Russia got a foothold in Cuba. If Russia didn't have Cuba to help it, the United States would have blown it up to Kingdom Come. But there's a nuclear power right there, Russia.
Right, so you can't do anything. Right.
Okay, remember, we're right between the two people who have the two, Venezuela and Cuba, who have Russia as the support, economic support and all of that, right? If it wasn't for Russia, they would have already taken the oil of Venezuela.
Right.
Now they got to go hat in hand asking Venezuela for its oil. Even after they, under Trump, they try to tell you that Maduro wasn't a good president and that they just created Guaido. I don't know if you guys remember that. But anyways, okay. So at the same time as they're telling you we need a security mission that the UN did a resolution to, or not just, but the UN said, you know, they approve it. It's a non-UN Chapter 7 mission. I can't go into the details. It just means they can shoot you to kill you. But they have a UN cover, but it's going to be led by Kenya, and then they're going to put any other little black nation who wants money for their people, they're going to let them come in and do what the F they want to do with us right now. So right now, Canada is training. Do you understand what that means? That they're training Jamaicans to come and help us with gangs? I have no words. Look up the gang warfare in Jamaica. They have a state of emergency because the gangs control the politicians. IT is fighting back. The gangs have always, since the 1980s, and now they tell you, because they know you don't know, that they're going to bring in Bahamas. Look at the violence rate in Bahamas. Look at the violence rate in U.S. Virgin Islands. Look at the violence rate of Brazil, Mexico. Look at the violence rate of Kenya. So because they know you don't know, because people are twerking, I don't know what they're doing. Looking at Diddy, I have no idea.
Right.
I'm just saying to you, okay, people wake up.
Right.
All right. So this Biden program allows any Haitian who has a family member in America could send sponsorship and say, I'm going to be responsible for the person, I'm going to take care of that person, and that person will not be a welfare person. They won't take any, like, I'm going to take care of that person. The Biden program says that, you know, they won't go into, like, state.
That brought me back to Africa on the Moon. You were looking at some footage on the interview that was done with Izili Danto discussing Haiti. Truth hidden behind headlines with Dr. Matt, that took place on the 5th of April, 2024. As we discussed earlier, our theme tonight is Haiti, Guyana, and the West. listen to some of this footage, you can begin to see how the West are moving to use various African governments to be a tool against the liberation of our people. In this case, we're talking about Haiti, and it fits the particular quote, as I started out earlier on this program, by Kwame Nkrumah on page 16 in his book, The Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare, where he stated, "The struggle against puppet governments is the basic condition for the survival and development of a genuine liberation movement in Africa. We must accept this challenge and fight to destroy this threat to our future as a free and unified continent." In this case, we're talking about the Pan-African world. What we're going to do right now, we're going to go to our political panelists, analysts, who have had a chance to view the whole particular interview. And we'd like to hear their critique and their synopsis from this particular interview, particularly as it talk about or critique the role of the West in giving our people the illusion that many African nations are fair nations because of their inability to be able to govern themselves. As Brother Haki alluded to earlier at the beginning of the program, they try to make us, we are being victimized, and saying that we are our own worst enemy and can't, you know, govern ourselves. So let's go to our panelists as we focus in on Haiti and that particular documentary. We start off with Brother Haki. There were many points and issues that were articulated in that particular documentary, the interview with Brother Haki. You got to, one of the things that was really interesting is that he talked about this whole question of how the West goes about creating our leaders and leadership, that we take so-called gangs members in the African community and tell us that they are leaders and create these narratives. Based upon your critique of this particular documentary, Brother Haki, can you speak to the question of how the role play the game, how the West plays the game of creating false leadership among their people? And some of the important points that you got out of this particular documentary that we can use as a tool for learning as it relates to our struggle and our pressure that we are dealing with currently. Brother Haki, I will turn the mic over to you now. The mic is yours.
Yeah. Brother Africa, let me expand a little bit on your thesis, because one of the things I think we have to fundamentally understand is when we talk about what's happening in Haiti, it's not an isolated situation. The same strategy they use in Haiti in terms of formulating a division in Haiti society, the ultimate destabilization of Haiti, is the same thing they do in the United States. You know, often there are discussions around, you know, African people in America being a colony. In fact, when you look in terms of the definition of a colony, then African, it does fit. Certainly, when we talk about Australia, there are certain things that the United States does in terms of maintaining its African colony here inside the United States. One of the things that they use is distortion of history, and that is key, because if people don't understand who they are, they don't understand accomplishments, so they don't understand the struggles they wage against injustice, then they tend to embrace the oppressor's history, which says that you should be pliant, you should be malleable, you should simply accept what's done to you because you're part, you know, of something much greater. Secondly, the thing that they do, they also, the whole question in terms of, this is your point, in terms of the neocolonial element, in terms of plaguing Africa, one of the things when you start talking about in the context of, you know, Africans in America, you talk about the colonial status, we can't dismiss this whole question around the elevation of the neocolonial elements within the African community. In other words, when you start talking about who gets promoted as leaders, clearly when you stop and think about these people who get promoted as leaders, most of them tend to be very ignorant, if not opportunistic. And so the question becomes, well, listen, if these people are supposed to represent the best in terms of African leadership, then there's something fundamentally askew in terms of, you know, this presentation. Because clearly these people who are positions of power never seem to have an adequate analysis in terms of what's going on in terms of the injustice the African people face. So how can they be leaders, but yet they're elevated as leaders? And you superimpose upon that the fact when you talk about, you know, poor education, or people's lack of knowledge, then this, then certainly the system can create in your mind this perception that, in fact, that these people are legitimate, even though they know nothing in terms of analysis. Thirdly, you know, we talk about in terms of maintaining this African colony inside the United States, you know, we got to talk about the role of social stratification. And that is clear. If you go back to the Philadelphia Plan, and one of the things that they've done was that they realized that in terms of, you know, dividing the African community, one of the things you can utilize in terms of dividing African people is the question around class. Well, you create a few opportunities for a few African people, highlight those African people whose quote-unquote achieve success, and then you said to the masses of African people, "So listen, there's no racism, there's no structural blockage. There's nothing. You can achieve anything you want to achieve. All you have to do is work hard at it." Of course, the reality is just more complex than that, but that's what they tell the people. And so the people don't understand that there are structural barriers, political and social, or even economic, in place that sort of negate against your, in terms of your ability to rise in society. It doesn't mean that you can't rise in society. What it does is complicate your ability to rise in the society. And so the social stratification is something that's very, very important in terms of people's position of power, because it does a very good job in terms of pitting so-called middle-income Africans against poor Africans, in the perception that middle-income Africans come from the position that, well, I work hard, you know, I'm self-motivated, I'm self-driven, so therefore I achieve a modicum of success because of my own individual initiative, not understanding the history and the blood and sacrifice of African people who made it possible for you to even get a job in the first place. So the social stratification is one is the third factor they use in terms of maintaining the colony, in the African colony here inside the United States. And lastly, Brother Africa, when we talk about destabilization, as we talked about Haiti, what is interesting is that when you talk about destabilization in terms of the African community right here inside the United States, how do they do that? Well, there are a couple of ways in which they do that. One of the ways in which they do it, of course, is the inferior educational system. So you have this situation where you have rich school districts and poor school districts. Well, the poor school districts don't have access to the latest technology, the latest books. Of course, the rich school districts do. And so the question becomes, well, if education is so important to the masses of people, why do you have, you know, alternative school systems? There should be one school system in which everybody, all children should have access to quality education, latest books, latest technology, and so forth and so on. So in order for them, so they do that because they understand with the inferior education come inferior understanding in terms of society in which you live in. So if you can't deconstruct, if you really don't understand these systems or the institutions that govern your society, then you can't fight against that which you can't understand. And so the object of the oppressors is to make sure they keep the people ignorant in terms of maintaining real control. And also when we talk about destabilization, when I talk about the implication of drugs, we talk about Ricky Walsh. And, you know, when he got out of prison, he talked about his relationship with the CIA in terms of disseminating drugs throughout the United States. That's certainly one of the ways in which they do it, because they there are no opportunities in terms of advancement, in terms of, you know, the formal economy. So the underground economy served a purpose in terms of providing jobs and opportunity to make money for a lot of people. And so the people in positions of power understand fundamentally that they understand the conditions are such that more and more young people are going to have no other recourse but to engage in the drug trade, because they see that's the only way of survival. It doesn't mean that the youth don't understand that what they're doing is highly destructive. A lot of them do understand that. But they feel like under the current situation, what else can they do in terms of survival? And after all, when you talk about human beings, your first instinct is survival. And so no one can blame anybody for surviving. We simply say to the youth that when you engage in the drug trafficking and destruction of your community, understand, in the long term, you undermine your own interests, because that community that you create is all going to have the potential to consume your children, your family, your loved ones. So understand that when you engage in that practice, then there is a downside in terms of engaging that practice. But more importantly, Brother Africa, I think, you know, when we talk specifically about Haiti, and we talk about in terms of establishing leadership, I think one of the things is that when you talk about people like KFD, you know what I'm saying, if you think back to Aristide, in terms of, you know, the U.S. that won Aristide out, when Aristide was actually the first democratic elected president of Haiti, he was actually trying to implement real democratic reforms in Haiti. United States said, "Well, no, can't do that. If you have real democratic reforms in Haiti, we can't export you. We can't export you like we want to export you. So what are we going to do? You got to go." But in order to get him to go, they had to create the conditions in which, you know, one, they can justify, you know, military intervention under the guise that Haiti is falling apart, and that if we don't come in to save them, they're going to kill each other. But more importantly, the reason they create that kind of instability in Haiti, because they want to create a threat for the president, Aristide, because if you don't leave, then you know what's coming next, you're going to die. So you got to get out of here. And so this is kind of games they play in terms of you know, raising the leadership, you know, in Haiti. And one last thing, Brother Africa, I think when we talk about, you know, legitimizing, you know, African leadership, the most corrupt leaders, corrupt individuals in the country, one of the things we have to understand is that as a second individual in terms of Haiti, which has been recently elevated to leadership status, and this is a guy they call Bobby Q. I can't pronounce his Haitian name. I don't speak French, so I can't pronounce his Haitian name. But they nicknamed him Bobby Q, and he supposedly heads the G9 family, which is the federation of 12 different gangs, that quote-unquote gangs that are operating in Haiti. Now, some people take exception with the word gang because a lot of these people are former military and police who are apparently, you know, going out through Haiti, you know, in terms of killings and this kind of mass violence that's taking place in Haiti. But in any event, so we talk about the parallels between what's happening in Haiti. We have to keep in mind that we have to understand fundamentally that the parallels that happen inside the United States in terms of the African community is no different. The strategies are the same. The tactics are the same. Elevating the most corrupt individuals is the same. We have these politicians who for some reason, enjoy the limelight, who enjoy the status in terms of being a politician, but in terms of trying to get them to take positions on high position on issues, particularly as it pertains to systemic inequality of capitalism, they won't touch it. They won't touch it for a reason, because they understand that if they touch it, they're going to lose their job making all that money. And so therefore, their thing is that they're not going to touch it. Their interest in terms of the aspirations and masses of the people, it's not an interest at all. So when we talk about in terms of how voting is supposed to empower community, we have to at some point be realistic in terms of understanding that the motivation of a lot of these politicians has nothing to do in terms of what's the interest of the masses of people. And so when we talk about Haiti, the same goes with Haiti. So let's be clear. So when we read all the stuff about Haiti, then understand this is all part of a grand strategy. And if we don't understand the grand strategy, we too can find ourselves victims of similar kinds of strategies. And I conclude with that.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Brother Anthony, can you speak to the narrative of three of the most well-known tools that the West use? And you can see this going on in Haiti and even in the communities where we live at today. Three of the most well-known tools that they use is sex, drugs, and guns. Sex, drugs, and guns. That narrative, man. Can you speak to that narrative?
Yes, I can. Let's see. The class struggle inside the African community is intensifying, as Brother Haki alluded to. And sex, and this is done through sex, drugs, and guns. As Sister Azili pointed out, sex is a weapon of war. Sexual exploitation is a weapon of war, and it has been used to sow division inside the African community. Around the throughout the world, not just in Haiti, but to some extent the U.S. and other parts of the African diaspora, and even at home. In terms of guns, the imperialist forces are the sources of guns inside the African community, and they sell them to certain sectors so we kill one another, and we're taught to blame ourselves for the oppression that we suffer. So we take out our frustrations on one another through the use of gun violence. And so, let's see, it's an intensification of the class struggle once again. And it's through the educational system that we're misled by. And it's important for us to take control of our education, especially the education of our youth. And if you examine our history, you see that the roots of our problem are ultimately ideological in nature. In other words, it's the way we think that ultimately drives our actions and causes us to fight amongst ourselves the way we do. And only organization and political education can resolve that. And we have to change the way we think. And that can only be done through organization under a revolutionary ideology.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Brother Moses, can you share some of the critical issues that were raised in this documentary that you felt was important to share with our listening audience? Mike is yours, Brother Moses.
I think the critical bottom line is no U.S. intervention in Haiti. Basically, the contradictions among the people are among the people, and they are capable of resolving the issues themselves without military intervention from Kenya or any other country. And that's the point that's being made, and that's the point that we need to understand in the U.S. of A. What we can do is stand with the Haitian people and stand against intervention in Haiti. That sums it up to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, your critical issues and concerns that you took from this documentary. The mic is yours. Can you hear us, Sister Eleanor?
Yes, thank you, Brother Africa. The most essential thing is that there should be no foreign troops in Haiti or any other country. And I think the other analysts really did a great job on breaking down the issue, the rape, the abuse, the other problems. But foreign invasion is a foreign invasion, so that should not happen, whether it's Kenya or anyone else. And Haiti has purposely been underdeveloped for decades, and we've seen that, and we've seen the Haitian pushback from the U.S., and most recently we saw them beaten back by border control along the Texas border. So the reality is Haiti should supervise Haiti, and there should be no foreign invasion. And as the sister said, the problem is really the way the West has weave the story and produce these gangs. As she said, the people in Baltimore, interestingly enough, don't produce weapons, but they're armed to the teeth. So are certain people in Haiti. That is a part of the capitalist invasion of Haiti and the financing of Haiti's demise by the West.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Haki, when we look at one of the critiques from this particular interview, she raises something that I think geopolitical is very important as we look at the West and their behavior. She talked about the West strategically controlling borders, countries' borders. And as a result, you control what comes in and what goes out. What that seems to indicate in the future is maybe people can project the possibility or the lackability or how the West will view that country. If there's a significant geographical borderline that is important that can serve as a tool of influencing and controlling continents and what goes in and what goes out. So just show general observation on this whole issue strategy of controlling other countries' borders. Brother Haki.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that. You know, when you talk about geopolitical considerations, one of the things they certainly want to do is to create some kind of scenario in which they can maximize their exportation of that particular country. So when you talk about shorelines in particular, you're talking about, you know, the facilitation of trade. So shorelines make trade possible relatively cheaply. And so therefore, if you are an imperialist power and you want to maximize your profits, certainly you want to control that coastline. And so therefore, you want countries that are favorable, you know, to being exploited. So to the extent that countries are not favorable to being exploited, then the U.S. puts into place, you know, all kind of maneuvers in terms of making sure if they can't persuade you in terms of bribing you to change your course to create a situation with possibly a coup or you get killed in terms of being replaced by someone who's more malleable, someone who's willing to carry out policy in the interest of the West. So clearly she's absolutely correct. But I think more importantly, Brother Africa, I think one of the things we have to consider when we talk about in terms of the behavior of the West, one of the ways we can anticipate, you know, in terms of potential instability or tactics in terms of trying to facilitate instability in states, one of the things we can look at in terms of investments in terms of Western states, and particularly the United States. When we talk about the United States in terms of investments, one of the things, investments increase and decrease. And according to the geopolitical interests of the United States, those investments have changed all the time. In the context of Haiti, it's very interesting. Because when you stop and think about it, and this is very interesting, when you talk about U.S. military expenditures in terms of Haiti, it's very, very interesting. Because between the years of 1988 to 1995, funding was relatively stable. In other words, at that point, not much going on in Haiti in terms of concern to the United States and to France and to other Western powers. Between 2013 and 2017, funding was also stable. Between 2018, funding increased. At that point, there was a move in terms of real concern in terms of real anxiety around the question in terms of RSD. That's very interesting. In 2019, a slight decrease in funding, they were convinced in terms of these discussions they had with RSD that he would play ball. Well, in 2020, they found out, well, he's not going to play ball. He's principled in terms of his opposition to the exploitation of Haiti, and he's going to stand for real democracy in Haiti. Well, the funding took off the charts, the highest funding to date at the time in which they chased RSD out of Haiti. For those who don't know, keep in mind, well, you know, when they used KFED in terms of formulating that all that confusion in Haiti, at that point in time, it was the same point in which the United States flew into Haiti and told RSD, said, listen, man, you need to get on this plane and get out of here before they kill you. And they flew him from Haiti to Africa. So clearly, Brother Africa, so when we talk about in terms of the behavior of the West, there are many indicators in terms of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it based upon their so-called aid, you know, to states. If you want to ascertain in terms of, you know, which state in Africa is more vulnerable in terms of U.S. military destabilization programs, then look at the investments in terms of that particular country. It'll tell you exactly. So as those investments increases, the high probability that instability regimen or program is going to be put into place for the sole purpose of destabilizing that country. It's a very interesting paradox, but I think one of the things that when we talk about the behavior of Western leaders, let's be very, very clear. When we talk about capitalism itself or imperialism generally, we have to understand the ruthlessness that the sister talked about, except that when the sister calls them to say that they're simply evil, They're not evil. They're simply a system in place which is incapable in terms of absorbing interests of humanity. And so therefore, that, in the sense of carrying out the interests of that system, they're ruthless in terms of carrying out that system. So we have to fundamentally understand that in terms of bringing about change that we need, we have to fundamentally change that system and not so much behavior of individuals, because you're always going to have individuals who have a disregard for humanity. But if you change that system, they become powerless in terms of carrying out their ill-considered designs. So with that, Brother Africa, I conclude.
Thank you, Brother Hakeem. Brother Anthony, as we look at the importance of understanding the necessity for Pan-Africanism, would the event of Pan-Africanism, people understanding that and can apply that, how would that concept, how would that objective could play a crucial role in eliminating the kind of confusion that we see are going on in Haiti as it relates to how the West is playing them? She alluded to how they seem to take other Africans from other countries and do their bidding for them. And I would think, Brother Anthony, the only reason why they do that, because they don't see themselves as one people, one history, one struggle. So talk to us a little bit about the importance of Pan-Africanism, why it's important to create the conditions for Pan-Africanism, a struggle for Pan-Africanism, and how Pan-Africanism will be a valuable tool for preventing what's going on now in Haiti and other African nations where they are getting played against each other. Brother Anthony, the mic is yours.
Certainly. As I mentioned earlier, the class struggle in African communities around the world is intensifying. We look at ourselves as individual nationalities or classes. We don't see ourselves as one people. And that's where Pan-Africanism plays a critical role in terms of looking beyond our ethnic, language, and religious differences, and start looking at ourselves as one people with one land, one common history, and one destiny. And that's the importance of Pan-Africanism to the solution to our problems. We suffer from disunity for various reasons. Class, economics, and ethnicity, and religious differences. They play a role, and that's why it's possible to pit Africans against each other, because our enemies take advantage of this and use our various differences to our disadvantage. And Pan-Africanism, the unification of Africa under under one government, one currency, one military, would solve our problems, which is why our enemies oppose Pan-Africanism, and so do certain opportunists among ourselves.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Brother Moses, talk to us. She mentioned the issue of how the history of Haiti has been a history of struggle against many of the European nations, not one nation, but nations, many, would it make sense to you to look at maybe if we had a unified Africa, if we will punish those political parties inside the U.S. border who has played a role, continue to play a role toward the stealing of the wealth of Haiti and other African nations and oppress the people, to punish them when it comes to so-called elections inside the U.S. Your response to that narrative, Brother Moses?
Certainly, the people of Haiti, the first black republic, this is no good deed is going unpunished. The imperialist powers from the beginning put sanctions and asked for their white settler reparations for their slaves being taken away from them and the loss of income from not being able to imperialize the island. Because the Haitian people have stood up and demanded independence and self-determination for themselves. And in that tradition of long, protracted struggle come down through the years until there's a democratically elected, a progressive person, Aristide, and the U.S., as usual, is against democracy and true democracy. You know, the democratic-minded, socialist-minded, communist-minded people had elected some leadership that they thought would be helpful for them and their struggle. And the U.S. and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the whole crew of neoliberals undermined Haiti, just like they undermined Gaddafi's government. And they undermine any and everywhere. People are standing up and taking control of their destiny. And so we have to support the Haitian people, support Pan-Africanism, the unification of all Africa under scientific socialism. And we have to struggle as in the political economy to recognize that we are struggling for a new democracy, a democracy in words and deeds. And yes, electoral politics is part of that democracy, and we have to recognize that because it's a weakness on our part to not have democracy. It shows that we're not consistent in our ideological and political mind. And so, you know, we have to vote, and because there's power in the vote. As Malcolm X said, the ballot or the bullet. That's how important it was. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, any additional issues or points you'd like to make that came from this documentary before we go to our revolution break?
One thing is really important about Haiti, and that's its geographical location, its proximity to Cuba, to Venezuela, to Colombia, to Nicaragua. And that's why, one reason I believe Haiti is held down as the first democracy, black democracy, since 1804. And just holding it down and keeping it from rising and utilizing its geographical location is important to the West in marginalizing other nations in the Caribbean. And there is a great deal of wealth in Haiti. There are people that outside of Port-au-Prince, as she said, that are living very well. And a large percentage of Haitians aren't victimized the way it appears in these Western-spun media clips that we see. And the interesting thing about those media clips is that you see a lot of women walking around with their shopping, and you see youngsters, and that's an interesting phenomena, because, you know, it reminded me of a riot they had years ago, maybe 20, 25 years ago, in the capital of the District of Columbia. Well, there was a kind of a political uprising where the Hispanics in that community rose up. But every day at 3 o'clock, they made sure nothing was going on so that the children of all the African children, no matter what their language, English, Spanish, Amharic, it didn't matter, so that they were able to go home or go where they were going, as well as the workers from the schools were able to move about the community. So sometimes there's more to the story. It's an underlining story, because you don't see people just being shot down as you do in Gaza when they approach food trucks or when they try to get a sack of flour. So there is clearly a real political spin that we see when we look at the news from Haiti, from Fox 5 and all of these news stations. And that's all. I think everyone else has really filled in the situation on Haiti. And there is an issue with class, but you don't see people suffering from malnutrition in Haiti, or that's not one of the spins they're using in the Western media. So that's about it. I think its geographical location is the reason that it's kept down. Tornado comes and hits the island of Santo Domingo. The island of Española. That's what it was called by, as she called them, to quote the person, the pedophile Columbus, end quote. Arrived on Española, and somehow the Dominican Republic always is able to recoup and after the hurricanes. Also, for some reason, they don't seem to hit that side of the island as badly as they do the Haitian side of the island. But I think the underdevelopment of Haiti is a political situation because of what Haiti represents historically to African people around the world.
Thank you, Sisters Eleanor. You're listening to Africa on the Move. We're going to take a rubber share culture break, and when we come back, we're going to ask our panelists and analysts, based upon the information that they have learned and wealth as it relates to Haiti and the Haiti struggle, what can we do, what can they do to make our contribution toward our brothers and sisters in Haiti liberation when we return. This is Africa on the Move.
A negative attitude towards Africa. In San Francisco, on African Liberation Day, Brother Walter Rodney, an African historian, noted both the importance of African Liberation Day in terms of our African identity and some of the root causes for our problem of identification.
I have met brothers and sisters who say that their mother tongue, quote unquote, is French, Spanish, Dutch, Portuguese, as well as English, which we speak. And because of this, we have a problem of identification. We do not know whom we are. And that is why this gathering is of great symbolic importance, because it is an act of identification. We are saying that we identify with the African people of the African continent. We are saying that we are an African people. And when we make this identification, have no illusions about the fact that this is a very revolutionary initiative. It is a rejection of every
other form of identification which the white society has asked us to accept. Let me draw your attention to something which white universities and white libraries practice. And this is a university community. Numerous universities lie around this land. You go into their libraries and check the Library of Congress card under Europe or European, you will find all entries listed concerning the continent of Europe. You will also find entries listed about Europeans in East Africa, Europeans in North Africa, Europeans in Asia and Australia. Look under the Chinese, you will find entries listed not only for mainland China, but for Malaysia and for the Chinese in North America. But look under Africa and the Africans, the only entries under Africans relate to the continent itself. There are no entries under Africans overseas. There is no such category. Africans who have been raped from the continent mysteriously disappear and become Negro.
Before we went on that break, we wanted our political panelists and analysts to think about, based upon the information they have been exposed to around the issue of Haiti, how can they use that information to help contribute toward our brother and sister liberation. So we'd like for them to just respond to that and share with our listening audience some suggestions in terms of what could they do to help contribute towards the liberation of our brother and sister in Haiti. So we'll start with Brother Moses. And for those who listen to the program, if you'd like to make a comment, you can do so now by dialing in at 323-679-0841. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So, Brother Moses, with this information, how can you use it as a tool for liberation? What would you prescribe to our listening audience in terms of what role they can play to help improve the situation in Haiti?
Thank you, Brother Africa. First of all, strategically orientation towards the basic problems that we face in terms of humanity. We have to understand that revolution is the only solution, and that's right here in the good old U.S. of A. And we're faced with jettison and getting rid of reactionary government of Israel, and the Haiti. Fits in that, you know, racism is what's driving racism and imperialism, and it's what's oppressing the people of Haiti ultimately, and that's a Pan-Africanist problem in terms of Africa being the motherland and Africa being standing on its feet and being strong. And united will solve a lot of the world's problems because respect will flow from that, just like racism is flowing from Israel. The state, the government, reproduces itself daily in the lives, ideologically, in the lives of people. That's why it's so important to have a revolutionary government. And so anyway, what we need to do is contact practically, pragmatically, you can contact your senators and your representatives and complain and try to get people in the office who are supportive of the Haitian people and not just for armed intervention in Haiti. And there's groups like Code Pink, Answer Coalition, World Can't Wait. There's a number of groups out here, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, D.C. We have to get organized and stand with people who of like-minded, who see the U.S. government for what it is and are willing to struggle for a better day, a new democracy, a not democracy in words and in deeds, and not just democracy in words, which is what bourgeois democracy is all about. And so we struggle for socialism and scientific socialism, and I leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Sister Eleanor, the West is attacking our little small country nation, Haiti, attacking one of our family members. If we don't come to and assist our brothers and sisters, are we acting like the enemy as well? Are we against our brothers and sisters? We stand by and do nothing.
Well, I don't think we're standing by and doing nothing. I think the Haitian people, the important thing is there to be non-intervention from any other country for the Haitian people to be able to resolve their issues, their domestic issues. And then the other thing that Brother Haiki had mentioned maybe last week was about language and how important it is to have a common language and in mobilizing the people. And so I think the issue of having a common language and the Haitian people struggling together will bring about a change. I think that the media has promoted a misconcept and misunderstanding about what's going on in Haiti. And the undermining of Caribbean nations is a part of what the United States has been moving towards and promoting with the with Cuba, with the embargo against Cuba for some 60-some years, and the oppression of Haiti. These things fall in line. And as one of the speakers on one of the videos talked about, Guyana had been virtually invisible. It wasn't until oil was discovered that suddenly France and other Western nations, these imperialists, sought to establish embassies and other things. So really the undermining of Central and South America has been one of the things that the West has done for some time. As I mentioned before, if you look at the painting of Diego Rivera, where he did a mural, and in the mural you see a cannonball with former U.S. President Eisenhower, and driving a Jeep, and it says Jeep specifically, is one of the Dulles brothers. And the general who was going to assassinate or work with others to assassinate the president of Guatemala, only to become the president of United Fruit. So you see these kind of things happening. And one of the Dulles brothers, I believe, was an attorney, and the other headed the CIA. So we see a lot of political manipulation. And what role is the CIA playing in the undermining of Haiti of these, quote, gangs? And I don't think these people realize how they're being manipulated. One of the guys I see always in these news, that you see the same photograph all the time, Brother Africa and listening audience, of this person carrying this very expensive rifle or some kind of weapon. He's carrying it all the time. He's not shooting anyone. I think he thinks he's protecting his community. And when Aristide was, as it was reported in the video documentary, it was alleged that the senior Bush kidnapped Aristide and took him off to Africa, it was to undermine the democracy of Haiti. The West is working to undermine Haiti. So the most important thing we can do is to politicize and educate our people. The most important thing, as Brother Robert said, is to get immobilized, get ourselves involved with, like, Brother Anthony's organization, Brother Haki's organization, with ANSWER and other organizations, and let them know. And let bring to their attention what's happening in Haiti, and to let them know that the Zionists are already pushing into Guyana from Israel. So, you know, this is a big thing, as well as intending to push into Africa. So we really have to mobilize and pay attention to what is going on in the United States. As Brother Moses said, to look at 2024 and it being an election year and taking action, make sure that we are out and promoting candidates that support our interests and people, and making sure that we promote those people and that we pay attention to what's going on in the political community in our community, and make sure that has an impact. Right now, many people are calling Biden genocide Biden. So we really got to take a look at what this means for the upcoming presidential election, that we have a fascist, Trump running, and then Biden supporting the Zionists. So he's not supporting the people. So we have to really think about that. We have to look at how the District of Columbia, for example, is has the city council has voted to have the embargo crushed, you know, the whole city council, I think unanimously. I may be mistaken, but it did pass to the city council that it is time for the U.S. embargo to stop. It's time for the U.S. to close down Guantanamo Bay. There are still at least 13 people jailed on Guantanamo Bay from the Iraqi war. And as it was said in one of the videos, it was a fraud. They said it was a war where there were weapons of mass destruction. None of this was true. So we see where there is a lot of misinformation being distributed to people and to the masses. We know that. We heard from one of the videos that the CIA is in Guyana. What are they doing? They're spreading misinformation. So we need to work at finding legitimate organizations that are working with the Haitian people and find out what they want to be done, what they feel needs to be done, and to make sure that you register to vote and take that vote seriously in 2024. And I just want to thank you, Brother Africa, for allowing me to be on the show this evening. And I believe that a united people is what's needed. And I think language plays such a role in education. Here, the Haitian people, they're still using the language of the oppressed. I don't know what role that has in their liberation, but it's interesting that they're using the language of the oppressed. But at that point, similar to the United States, maybe they don't have access to any other language. You know, people about learning Kiswahili decades ago, but that didn't happen successfully. So I don't know what the solution is for Haiti, other than finding those who are working with the Haitians to try to work with them and find out what we can contribute.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. Brother Haki, talk to me. Y'all going to make me lose my mind up in here, up in here. Y'all going to make me act a fool up in here, up in here. Brother Haki, if I understood correctly that if you look at the two-party system inside the United States and historical looting that they have participated in and continue to participate in, is there any logic of going to these institutions, going to these politicians and thinking they're going to help and support the liberation movement of Haiti and Haitian people? I'm missing something. Don't make me lose my mind up in here tonight. Your response.
Yeah, first, Brother Africa, let me just clarify something. I made a misstatement in terms of the year 2020, in terms of USAID expenditures for Haiti. Keep in mind, you know, in the 20s, keep in mind, President Moise was killed, and prior to that, there was a lot of disturbance going on in Haiti at that time. So the kind of expenditures that increased in 2020. Given the fact that you know that this situation was brewing, and also in addition to earthquakes and hurricanes happening in Haiti at that time, do you think the expenditures will continue to rise? That's something that happened. So apparently, U.S. was satisfied that enough expenditures was being expanded in Haiti to achieve its objectives, that there was no need in terms of increasing the expenditures. So that's the point I wanted to make. So I just want to clarify that. Now the question, you know, Brother Africa, let's be very clear. I think one thing we have to start doing, we have to look at things when we understand the United States. We have to look at it as a bureaucracy, and as a bureaucracy, there are certain divisions of labor. There are certain specialties. When we talk about centers of power, let's be very, very clear. In the context of capitalist society, when we talk about centers of power, we're talking about corporations. That's what we're talking about. So when we talk about corporations with centers of power, then we're talking about, you know, in terms of building, in terms of using money to exert its will. Now, militarily, when we talk about centers of power, we got to talk about the Pentagon. So the Pentagon function is totally independent of the political system. Pentagon bureaucrats don't respond to any initiatives that come out of Washington, D.C. That is not their job. Their job is to protect the nation, and they do what they think is in the best interest of the nation. And because the Constitution formally understands the interest in terms of the Pentagon protecting the state, the government, in terms of political terms, really have very little to say in terms of the actions of the Pentagon. So if we think for one second that somehow we're going to get politicians to go to the Pentagon and say, okay, we're going to negate that process, or Congress is going to create laws to say, okay, Pentagon, you no longer can fund these particular wars. Well, you know, the bottom line thing about it, there is on the books, supposedly Congress is supposed to be the body of politics that determines in terms of war, particularly in terms of expenditures. Well, the reality is, when you talk about in terms of the Pentagon being independent, the Pentagon actually controls the expenditures when it comes to war and what wars are going to be engaged. No politician can do anything in terms of undermining that process. And this is the problem that we have. So we want to believe that if we somehow vote the right people in, that they're going to solve our problems. It's not going to happen. I don't know what it's at this point in history, I just don't know what it's going to take to get people to understand that it's not going to happen. In terms of bureaucracy, it's not established for them to have any power over the Pentagon. The Pentagon is totally self-sufficient. In fact, this is the only organization in the entire country that can spend without limitations. Not only that, if it finds a deficit, it can take money from other accounts from other departments in the country. That's the only agency that can do that. No politician can stop that. No one in a politician even attempt to stop that. And that's the reason why. They understand, in terms of their mission as politicians, their job is not to interfere in terms of the security of the state. Pentagon is sanctioned with the security of the state, not politicians. So politicians have no say-so. So we think for a second we can get some politician and say, okay, all right, that's enough of that. And no more bombardment of Haiti. No more of these destabilization programs. None of this stuff is going to happen in Haiti. We want it to end. What politician, even if they wanted to, what politician has the power to tell the Pentagon you would not engage in that kind of activity when it's their job to protect the state? It's just a no-brainer. I don't know why we keep going over this over and over and over again. It's just self-explanatory. If, in fact, we want to help the Haitian people, then what we have to do is create the necessary conditions in the society in which we thrive, and Haitian people begin to see that, given the changes that would take place in context of African society, that if we implement similar kind of changes, we too can empower ourselves to bring about the kind of change that we seek. So we have the opportunity in terms of setting an example in terms of being unique, in terms of despite the oppression that our people face in America, that we can create the conditions, the institutions, the organizations that truly empower our people, and it's reflected in terms of, you know, how well our kids do in school. It's reflected in terms of how well we take care of one another. It's reflected in terms of, you know, how we mediate violence in a community. All those things we can do. It's simply a question in terms of organization. We can do that. So we can demonstrate to the Haitian people, given that the oppression that the Haitian people face, that we face similar kind of oppression here in America. Given that reality, then our example might serve as a useful tool in terms of implementing similar kinds of in Haiti in terms of fighting against a very oppressive and imperialistic system. But definitely, Brother Africa, if we think for one second that somehow politicians are going to, if you're going to vote the right politician in, and they're going to say, okay, Pentagon, stop doing that, it's not going to happen. We have to think strategically, and not only strategically, we have to think realistically. We have to understand if we're talking about bureaucracy. And you talk about different levels of bureaucracy, then we understand that in terms of that bureaucracy, politicians come in at a minimum at third place. You have the corporate structure, you have the military industrial complex, then you have politicians. Politicians have no power in terms of affecting those kind of changes. And that's why, so if no matter who you vote, they can, these politicians can tell you all day long, well, vote for me, I'm gonna advocate for the end of, you know, for Haiti to be free. That's what I'm going to do. Well, even if they had the desire to advocate for the end of the hostilities toward Haiti, the bottom line is, who's going to listen? I guarantee you, Democratic Republican Party, it won't even get out of committee. It's not going to happen, because they understand that that is not the politician's job to regulate the state. They understand that. Then what is it that we fundamentally can't grasp when we keep saying over and over again every week, we keep saying politicians are symbolic. They're symbolic. They have no real mission. They're symbolism. That's all they are. They create the perception that the fact that we can participate in the political process. They have zero power. Even the most power they have, if they have any power, is maybe on a local level. Maybe they can say mandate that schools close earlier, or you have, schools will stay open 7 days a week. It's symbolic. In terms of real power and the way the country is organized, it's the local level, the state, then the federal government. Even the city on the local level, if you try to implement certain changes the state is in opposition to, it doesn't get passed. It's designed that way. What is it that we fundamentally have a difficult time understanding? No politician can do those things that we like to see done. It's not going to happen. That's why our people keep waiting for these politicians to solve our problems, and our problems can get worse and worse and worse and worse. And then we keep asking ourselves, why? No matter how much we say it's incumbent upon us as a community to create the kind of conditions that we have to have in terms of survival of, as a people, the empowerment of our children, and to fundamentally address the issues that we face as a people in terms of a very oppressive society. It's up to the people. Until our people understand it fundamentally, ain't no politicians and powers even impact any of that stuff. Damn, how clear can I make it? I can't make it much clearer. Seriously. I mean, how clear can maybe I'm just not particularly clear enough. But I don't know what you can say. Politicians are symbolic. Pure and simple. Why do you think there's so much bureaucratic drag when it comes to Washington, D.C.? I mentioned some weeks back, Nina Turner, one of the most progressive human beings in this damn planet. She's a Democrat out of Ohio. The sister was blocked by the Democratic Party from running for office because her politics was just too progressive, too radical for the Democratic Party, Democratic Central Committee. Huh? Wait a minute. Ain't you telling me this is the kind of sister that you want in positions of power so she can really advocate for the interests of the people? Well, the DNC, the Democratic Central Committee, said, hell no. She's not symbolic, or she's not representative of what we stand for. Hell no, she would not get that endorsement, and we'll block at every turn. We'll invest money in other politicians to make sure she loses. What the hell is going on here? Why is it that we can't fundamentally understand that the problems that we're confronted with can only be solved by us, the community itself? Until our people fundamentally get that reality, but fundamentally understand that, the situation that we're confronted with become more and more dire. And as this economy deconstructs, we got to understand, just in terms of strategy, certain one of the easiest targets in terms of picking out when it comes to formatting, you know, a right-wing movement in society, is to attack African people, because you have a long history of the state attacking African people. So very easy, irrespective of socioeconomics, to get poor whites, middle-class whites, wealthy whites to attack African people. Very easy to get done. It's a long historical conditioning process, and which is very easy to accomplish. Politicians cannot absorb any of that. They cannot resolve any of that, those problems that they were fronted with. It takes a community, and Brother Africa, I conclude with that.
Brother Anthony, the last voice for the night. Can you help me out from lose my mind, up in here? Give the people some ideas, some thoughts, on how we can best serve and help our brothers and sisters in Haiti. Your final thoughts on part one of a two-part series, Haiti, Guyana, and the West. The mic is yours, Brother Anthony.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brother Africa. Let's see, the solution... to the problem of the people in Haiti is Pan-Africanism. That is the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. And the best way that we can show that is since we have similar problems, our solution must be similar, and that is the permanent organization of the masses of our people. That will solve our problem. That, guided by a revolutionary ideology, such as Nkrumism, Tureism, which people can learn more about by visiting our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org. And that, and through, by visiting our website, people can learn more, learn the truth of our history and about how we can organize ourselves to achieve Pan-Africanism, our objective, which is the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. And it is on us organized in a critical manner that can bring that about. We can't depend upon the Republican Democratic duopoly or any other capitalist parties to solve our problems. We can only depend upon ourselves, our organization, and our work. And let's see, we must stand with other people that are fighting against similar forms of oppression, such as the Palestinians in their struggle against settler colonialism and Zionism. And we must unite with the form alliances with the Irish who are fighting against settler colonialism as well, and the indigenous people of the West. And we must organize, and it's through organization that we can achieve our liberation, and therefore being an example to the people of Haiti in their struggle for genuine liberation from all the forces of imperialism. I conclude on that.
And on that note, we thank Brother Anthony, panelists and analysts, and of course, you, the listening audience and supporters, allowing Africa on the Move to come to your home this evening, where we can speak truth to the powerful, the powerless. We'd like to share with you that you can join us every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we take on various issues and subjects that are having an impact on the lives of our people and all of humanity. Remember, this program is under the banner of the African Women Association. And if you would like to share your blessing with us, feel free to do that by zelling us at $LSE, SME, SE, RO, B. And we thank you for any contributions that you can make. And we want you to remember that wherever there is economic dependency, there cannot be no freedom. So support your institutions. Support Africa on the Move. Share this program with your friends. And let's be a listenership for the next 3 months to access more than 100,000 people. So on that note, we'd like to thank you for listening to Part 1 of the two-part series, Haiti, Guyana, and the West. We'll see you next week. Let's continue to strive to go forever. Stop with Mellon. We listen to the voice of Brother Africa, and this is Africa on the Move. We'll see you next week.
If you think of the Middle East in this modern time, you can't help but say the word Palestine. People there have lost their land. Some have lost their home. They live in other countries, their freedom almost gone. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. Needs our love. Palestine needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. There seems to be no answer to give us the reason why people cannot live, so no one has to die. We've gotta take a stand for freedom, take a stand for truth, take a stand for justice. That's what we've got to do. 'Cause Palestine,
Palestine
needs her freedom. Palestine,
Palestine
needs our love. Needs our love. Palestine,
Palestine
needs her freedom. Palestine needs our love. People of all countries, of every race and creed, we need a new beginning. Let us plant the seed. Plant the seed of love and let that love seed grow. Plant the seed for everyone so all the world will know that Palestine,
Palestine
needs her freedom.
Needs her freedom.
Palestine,
Palestine
needs our love. Needs our love. Palestine,
Palestine
needs her freedom. Needs her freedom. Palestine,
Palestine
needs our love.
Marcus Gatenberg come to town. Marcus Gatenberg come to town. Can't get no food to eat. Can't get no money to spend. Whoa. Can't get no food to eat. And you, hello. Come, little one, come. Oh, let me do what I can for you and you alone. Oh, you know the right and do it now. Shall be. With many tries, weeping and wailing and prophecy are fulfilled. Whoa, catch them, Javi, catch them.
Spirit conspiracy theorists. What if Martin had Twitter and all that civil rights talk, man? I wouldn't want to hear it. This integration been disintegrating. Better off in our own ghettos with our own situation. His last speech got him assassinated. Black business was booming. We wasn't just a consumer. Controlling our narrative. We have more marriages. And see what the damage did. They ain't that bad a bitch. And welfare did us way worse than the slavery. I'll never be an agent. I don't care what they paying me. Seem like Nip had the same old story. If we pay a black hater, tell a different allegory. Like Pearl Harbor and 9/11 was a mystery. Supremacy will go the extent to keep their history alive. All I'm saying, if these leaders was alive, who be on the internet trying to divide? Use a hotel hustler, trying to fear people of that low vibe structure. Agree to disagree and we ain't gotta tear our own down. Argue in silence, or forever be our own downfall.
All I wanna say is that we're giving it away. Soul ain't for sale and the devil is a fake. Argue with a silence, but don't let it seal our fate. Fight behind doors, but don't ever show our face. Cause if Mom had Twitter, Malcolm had Twitter, it'd be our own people do the trolling. Spill ignorance and do the scolding. Where we going? Cause if Mom had Twitter, and Malcolm had Twitter, it'd be our own people do the trolling. Spill ignorance and do the scolding. Where we going?
Sometimes the key to life you looking for be right in front of you. Tried to show my man hidden colors, he said nothing new. I said, what if we been lied to most of our freaking lives? Henry, you're coming tonight, and you ain't speaking right, your arrogance precedes you. What if your faith did? I spoke to God on Wednesday, he said most of it's basic. $1 million mindset to be flying, stay hungry. Hieroglyphics writing on walls you couldn't take from me.
A man lay dead in the street today. I must have bumped my head and landed in 1940 or something, I swear. And all I have is love and joy to give. I need to spread my wings. I need to fly away. I wanna get high today. Who got five on my little bundle of temporary? Man, I wanna live long enough to be legendary. Your statistics said by now that I'm gonna be dead and buried. But when I heard your voice, it seems as if we met already. And a march for our rights, that civil, the same purpose. Two different tribes and we fighting the same person. Could it be that our eyes was deceiving us? We had to have faith when nobody believed in us.
And cosmic companionship sustained me after my husband was assassinated and gave me the strength to make my contribution to carrying forward his unfinished work.
A man lay dead in the street today. I must have bumped my head and landed in 1940 or something, I swear. And all I have is love and joy to give. I need to spread my wings. I need to fly away.
My godson Elijah and little girl named Corinne.
To say the black of the best, the sweeter the juice. I say the darker the flesh and the deeper the roots. I give a holler to my sisters on welfare. If I can, if don't nobody else care. And I know they like to beat you down a lot. And when you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. So please don't cry, dry your eyes, never let up. But don't forget, girl, keep your head up. And when he tells you you ain't nothing, don't believe him. And if you can't learn to love you, you should leave him. Cause sister, you don't need. And I ain't trying to catch up, I just call him how I see. You know what makes me unhappy? When brothers make mates and leave a young mother to be a cat. And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and I came from a woman. I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women. I think it's time to kill for our women, time to heal our women, be real to our women. And if we don't, we'll have a race of babies that will hate the lady that make the baby. And since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? I know you're fed up, lady, but keep your head up.
Head up.
Ooh, child,
I realized mama really paid the price. She nearly gave her life to raise me right. And all I had to give her was my mic. Drink the how about the mic and make it to the light screen. I'm trying to make a dollar out of this thing. It's hard to be legit. The bills say you're rich. And in the end it seems I'm heading for the pen. I try to find my friends, but they're blowing in the wind. Last night my buddy lost his whole family. It's gonna take the man in me to conquer this insanity. It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know it's funny when it rains and pours. They got money for wars but can't feed the poor. Said it ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is it ain't no hope for the future. And then they wonder why we crazy. I blame my mother for turning my brother into a black baby. We ain't meant to survive cause it's a setup. And even though you're better, baby, I'm better. Babies on their own. I know it's kind of rough and you're feeling all alone. Daddy's long gone and he left you by your lonesome. Thanks the Lord for my kids, even if nobody else wants them. Cause I think we can make it, in fact, I'm sure. And if you fall, stand tall or come back for more. Cause ain't nothing worse than when your son wants to know why daddy don't love him no more. You can't complain, you was dealt this hell of a hand without a man feeling helpless.
De ma famille. Évidemment, nous sommes débrouillés. Je suis seul dans un appartement vide. J'ai pas de quoi me faire des débrouiller. Je me tiens la tête devant mon poster. Suis-je un imposteur? Dois changer de posture, j'hésite. Dois changer de couleur ou me laisser couler. Reprendre la couleur, j'hésite. Tomber bien bas, dès qu'elle descend. Dois lui donner la mort, n'a pas en descente. Tout ce que je fais n'a aucun sens. Qu'est-ce que je suis censé faire? Car c'est sans idée. J'ai sans visu, je suis complètement sonné, mais c'est ça pour être honnête. Oui j'ai sonné. J'ai mis la charrue avant les bœufs, bien sûr j'ai cassé, j'étais de rattraper le temps. J'ai fondé dans le mur me croyant vaincu, j'ai oublié qu'il était en béton. Ben je suis complexé, t'as vu, à la longue ça devient embêtant. Je me sens prêté pour pression, je me sens obligé d'oser le son. Rien à mettre dans la cocotte minou, car je dépense tout dans le loto. Je me ronge les ongles à chaque minute. J'ai pas à faire un rideau. Oui c'est vrai, tu sais dans ma cour, le temps passe le bout. Oui c'est vrai, tu sais dans ma cour, je l'avoue. Tomber bien bas, dès qu'elle descend. Dois te donner la mort, n'a pas en descend. Tout ce que je fais n'a aucun sens. Qu'est-ce que je suis censé faire, car c'est sans idée. C'est sans visu, je suis complètement sonné, qu'est-ce que ça pour être honnête. Oui j'ai sonné. J'ai mis la charrue avant les bœufs, bien sûr j'ai gâché, j'essaie de rattraper le temps. J'ai fondé dans le mur me croyant invincible, j'ai oublié qu'il était embêtant. Je suis complexé, t'as vu, à la longue ça devient embêtant. Je me sens prêté sous pression, je me sens obligé d'oser le son. Mm-hmm.
repentant. C'était du repentant. Oh non, c'était du repentant.
La charrue avant les bœufs, les soeurs j'ai gâté, c'était de rattraper le temps. J'ai foncé dans le mur, me prenant 26, j'ai oublié glisser en béton. La seconde clé que t'es ta vue, à la longue ça devient embêtant. Je me sens prêté tout pression, je me sens obligé d'oser le temps.
But I don't remember when. And every time we get to where we're entering, I feel my beliefs and hopes surrendering. But I know I'll be coming home soon. Yes, I know I'll be coming home soon. Like the enemies that we are battling, I am nothing but a human alien, left with nothing else but to keep wandering down this path while stopping my hands trembling. Because I know that I'll be coming home soon. And yes, I know that I'll be coming home soon. With a soldier's eyes, with a soldier's eyes, with a soldier's eyes, with a soldier's eyes. I've seen inside the devil's dreams where young men die, and graveyards open up their arms for mothers left to cry. I have seen the bleeding, and I hear what we've done, but just like every other fool here, I'll keep marching on. Because I know that I'll be coming home soon. And yes, I know that I'll be coming home soon. With a soldier's eye, with a soldier's eyes, with a soldier's eyes, with a soldier's
eyes. Y sigo respetando al rap de Puerto Rico, al cubano, al colombiano, mexicano y español. Pero lo de nosotros sale del corazón, con sentimiento, con talento, violento. Ojo, no con armas, sino con conocimiento. El intelecto emana de los foros. Te metes en internet y lo ves en los foros. Es sabiduría, aunque muchos locos piensen que son habladurías. Conozco primero a fondo la ciencia mía, pa' que después hablen como comadre chismosa. Yo te escribo en verso y en prosa. No soy Alice en el país de las maravillas. Estamos claros, te portas mal, te acribillan, te hacen papilla. Es que eso es obvio. O eres ángel o eres demonio, niño. O eres ángel o eres demonio. Quiero ver a toda la gente con las manos arriba. ¿Dónde están los latinos con las manos arriba? Que vive el hip hop con las manos arriba. ¿Qué? Con las manos arriba. ¿Qué?
viva la cultura con las manos arriba, el deporte con las manos arriba, Venezuela con las manos arriba, ¿qué? ¿Qué? Sentimiento, sabor, rumba, corazón, la salsa retumba, retumba el tambor, no se te olvide el joropo, recuerda el folclor, te lo digo el rap, crece la tensión, ritmo caribeño, se siente el calor, esta es música de calle, al que no le guste que vaya a llorar para el valle, es música con estilo, tú estás claro así que solo dilo, pa' que lo sepa, suena tan criolla como comerse una arepa, volar papagayo, llámalo, cometa, tropo perinola que te ruche en las metras, música venezolana en todo lo que se haga en Venezuela, no solo es un ritmo, escucha las letras, tan criollo como que te vean y te digan epa, que te choquen las manos, al final del día, dale, hablamos, y lo que más me alegra, la gente latina siempre será gente negra. Felice Bolivia, Brasil y Cuba, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Honduras, República Dominicana y Ecuador, Guatemala, Haití, El Salvador, México, Perú, Panamá y Uruguay, Argentina, Nicaragua, Puerto Rico, Paraguay, todos unidos nuestra América entera, junto a Venezuela una sola bandera, junto a Venezuela una sola bandera, comandante, te amo, que Dios te bendiga.
¿Dónde está Amaranta? El Amaranta y el Pinky, ¿dónde están? ¿No? La cantera.
Cancer, Gemini, Aries, Virgo, Capricorn, Libra, Pisces, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Taurus, and Aquarius. Now you know I hold it down for them Leo.
It's your birthday, yes it's your day. It's your birthday, ooh your favorite holiday. It's your birthday, yes it's your day.